From the heart of Big Ten country, Los Angeles, California, Ryan Abraham and David Woods present the Podcast of Champions.
Welcome, everyone, back to the Podcast of Champions. I'm David Woods from Bruin Report Online, the UCLA site on the On3 Network.
And I'm Ryan Abraham from USCFootball.com, the USC site on the 24/7 Sports Network. And together, you know what we do. We make the Podcast of Champions, talking all things Big Ten football. We are finishing up our sort of spring storylines, 3 weeks of that. We've been talking about the teams as they start spring football. The last four teams of the Big Ten had started spring ball. And our friend Bob Connolly over there at
Bill
Connolly, his good friend.
Good God.
But at ESPN does the SP Plus preseason rankings. Those came out recently. So we're going to go over where all the teams in the Big Ten, there's 18 of them. Did you know that, David? 18?
Count them again. I don't believe it.
There are 18. We're going to go over all of them, where they are. From Ohio State at one to Purdue down.
Wow, spoiler alert.
Down in the 80s somewhere. If you have questions for the show, we got a few emails today. Big10cast, all spelled out, at gmail.com. Call or text us, 424-532-0670 is the number. I don't think we have any voicemails this week. You can tweet us at B1G Podcast. And, of course, on Apple or Spotify, leave a five-star rating. And you can review us on Apple and leave little comments on Spotify. Do we have any new reviews?
We do. We have one from Retired Insurance Man.
Ooh, okay.
Two rated. Maybe it meant top rated, but it says two rated. T-O-O.
We are two rated.
Five stars. This podcast gets five stars. The hosts pretend to be stupid, but they're both really smart. So never ask them any questions because they will give you smug answers. Ryan has a master's degree in electrical engineering, which means he knows high-level math and formulas and stuff. At one point, he took his talents to Silicon Valley. Dave was a National Merit Scholar, meaning he was smarter than 99.9% of the 16-year-olds in the country at one point. He also was a history major who tutored folks on how to pass the law school admissions test. Can you imagine sitting in a bar with him discussing the Bronze Age collapse? Although he hates beer and will not drink it. Two thumbs up, Frank in Sacramento. Now that's false.
He doesn't hate beer. He hates, like,
IPAs.
IPAs.
I don't like drinking flowers. But otherwise, I like beer, as the great and memorable Brett Kavanaugh once said. I like beer. I still like beer.
He likes beer.
We all like beer.
Thank you for that. I think the theme of that is that both of us used to be smart at one point.
Correct. Correct.
So maybe we were smart.
No longer.
I definitely think I was. I don't think I am anymore.
It just occurred to me, actually, how long ago 16 years old was.
Yes.
That was 24 years ago now. I am old.
Yeah, that's okay. You don't look it, though.
No, I don't look a day over 73.
No, you're good. I got to ask you something, David. Have you been following along this March Madness stuff? Do you know what it is?
Tell me more.
How's your bracket doing?
What's a bracket?
We got the Final Four, baby, in both men's and women's. Same exact Final Four in the women's, 2 years in a row, by the way. Like chalkity, chalk, 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 all number ones. But your favorite team, the Arizona Wildcats, are playing our very own Michigan Wolverines. And we got the Illini, Illinois, two teams of the Big Ten in the Final Four. They're taking on UConn. I don't know if they are good. Have they won a championship in a while? I'm not sure. But so much is going on. You want to try to win this. Those teams, the Big Ten teams, are trying to win. What are you trying to do? You want some bragging rights? No, you want like that trophy. You want to be the best of the best. My bookie, they're going to help you get there. They're giving away $100,000 in cash for their March Madness brackets. They're celebrating 100,000 followers on Instagram. They got another $10,000 in prizes just kicking in for that. So it's not just about picking upsets and talking trash in the group chat. This is about turning your ball knowledge, and I know you have it, David, into a bankroll. So if you're going to be in it to win it, go over to mybookie.ag. Use our promo code just for us, POC, Podcast of Champions. Get your first bet covered up to $500. If it misses, you can activate that bet back bonus token. And what will it do? Run it back. Yeah, you missed your bet for $500. Run it back with the bet back bonus token, and boom, you're home free. The madness only comes once a year, so don't watch it. Win from it only at MyBookie.
That was gorgeous.
Thanks.
Bet back bonus.
I've done that pretty well. It's a hard one, the bet back bonus.
The bet back bonus.
Yeah. So Saturday night's the men's? I text David, by the way. He doesn't respond.
Saturday night is the beginning of the Final Four, correct?
Yeah. So if you guys like somehow have David's phone number and you think like, oh, he doesn't like me, like we're pretty good friends. Like, you know, I'm talking about work stuff. He doesn't respond to my stuff, especially if like talk a little trash, like when Arizona's like killing somebody. I'm like, you like this team, right? Which he hates Arizona, but you know, why is that?
I can't put my finger on it, man. It's hard.
Every time we go to Vegas, it's like it's just Tucson comes. There's like a whole all of Tucson.
Mini Tucson. So Vegas. Much Tucson. Good God. There's like there's a certain amount of Tucson that's like appropriate and totally fine. And then there's the amount that shows up in Vegas for the
it's kind of an obnoxious
Pac-12 tournament.
Yeah.
Yeah,
the Pac-12.
That's too much Tucson. I think it's because it is like distilled Tucson. Like it's more potent. Like the Tucson that shows up to Vegas is like it's like the pure strain of Tucson. Whereas in actual Tucson, you get transplants, you get other people who are like not pure Tucson. But then when they go to Vegas, it is unadulterated.
And there's like,
it's like Tucson adjacent stuff,
but they're like, they want to be Tucson. They're not quite Tucson.
The Tucson that arrives in Vegas is like the blue meth, right? Like it's like the 99.8% pure. Whereas like the one, the Tucson in Tucson is more like the 67% stuff that, you know, occasionally can kill you, but you know what I mean?
I had a good time there a few years back. We did like a boys golf trip out there. It was fun. I haven't really spent much time in Tucson, like to a game or two, but that's it. But it was fun to spend like a long weekend there. We don't got much going on.
The thing that always reminded me of Tucson, whenever, like, so one thing that I thought was quintessentially Tucson, when I was there, this is when I was a student, and I was thinking very poetically at the time, but I saw like just a plastic grocery bag just tumbling down the desert street, and I'm like, That's it exactly. It's an urban tumbleweed. Like that's what Tucson feels like.
Jeez, you're making a lot of
urban
friends.
Tumbleweeds.
Urban tumbleweeds. I mean, they have actual tumbleweeds there
too. Yeah, but like, but like a little bit of trash just kind of floating down the street.
So you're pulling for your Wildcats.
Yeah, Saturday. Obviously.
West Texas Mike. Yeah, we got the chat going if you want to like jump in there. West Texas Mike is usually active in there. We appreciate him. Illinois and Michigan are in the Final Four, but what is the Big Ten podcast talking about? Their memories of Tucson.
Damn right.
We already mentioned that this happened. That's like a basketball mention here because it was part of my ad read. So like, you know, we got to help out with the My Bookie stuff. Thank you, West Texas Mike. So what we're going to do is continue talking about the we've tried to give you like some storylines for every. This is true. Kyle says Jason Shear getting triggered now. Yes.
I love Jason. I say this just to
we liked having him on the
just
show.
Just to have him poke a little bit. You know?
We liked having him on the show when we did. Do you remember when we did Pac-12 stuff?
I will say, you know, one thing with this Move to On Three, I miss having like that particular Arizona site to kind of just needle occasionally. It's sad. I think also with like somewhat of the like devolution of the old Pac-12, this was already in process, but like UCLA Arizona week was always a fun time to just do like a week of trolling. And they played this year, but they played in like November. It's like, this isn't the same deal. I don't want this.
It's not the same. But anyway, what we've tried to give you some storylines as the different Big Ten teams started spring football. USC is actually ending. UCLA just started, right? Today? Was it today?
Today.
Yeah. And UCLA is ending on Saturday. But there were four teams left that we were going to discuss and kind of give you some storylines heading into spring football for these teams. First up, we've got
Maryland Terrapins.
Maryland. So Mike Locksley, he's back.
Yeah. Reasons unknown.
He's not alone in that when we talk about some Big Ten coaches, but he did have a very good recruiting coup with one five-star there, Zion Ely? Is that how you say
sure.
it?
Sure. Ely. Yeah. Whatever.
Ely. Highest ranked recruit in school history, 6'4", 220-pound edge rusher, those guys hit right away usually. He looks the part. He had 12 sacks and 20 tackles for loss his senior year at St. Francis. Can he be a game wrecker right away, David? Is that, can you ride that all the way to making a bowl? I don't know, but that's one of those things where a five-star recruit, a high-ranked player, it's changed a little bit, but man, sometimes it can just give you a little bit of juice and get the fan base excited. You got to win, but at least you may buy some time.
I mean, he's already Mike Locksley's already bought a lot of time. They've gone 4-8 and 1-8 in each of the last 2 years. So it's not even just that they're doing like traditional Maryland where they start hot and then they collapse, but they're like starting hot and then like losing the ability to play functional football over the course of the year. So like for me, it's not about any particular player. It's can Mike Locksley get this back to 8-5 instead of 4-8? And that's not going to be dependent on, I don't care how good a freshman is, freshman five-star edge, sure, but I mean, they need better all-around play. Like, they need better quarterback play. They need, you know, Malik Washington to be a lot better this year. Like, they need a lot of stuff to happen. I'm kind of baffled that he's still there. They're 12 games under 500 under him. And Maryland clearly has money because they keep landing some pretty decent recruiting classes. And where are the expectations? Doesn't seem like there are any.
It doesn't seem... Yeah, that's been their like MO though, right? Like to come out.
He has 31. So they are 17-48 in conference since he started there.
Wow.
He's been there 7 years. It's going to now be the eighth year. What is there to show from any of this?
But that is right though. They would always start off hot and then just sort of like fall apart. And they had that big win against USC a couple of years ago. I was there. down 14 and 1-1. Yeah, that was crazy. Okay, let's move on. There's a lot of M schools in this conference that we cover because like I was scrolling there, this is in order and it's like further down if you go from Maryland to this one.
Minnesota Golden Gophers.
Yes, rowing that boat, David. So the Ducks get involved in this one. Coy Parrish, he was like stud defensive back for them. They were all excited. Oregon just poached him, took him away. That's not good. They got Drake Lindsey coming back. Running back Darius Taylor was a stud. But, you know, this kid was from Minnesota. He was a star. He was first team all Big Ten as a freshman in 2024. And, yeah. He's gone. So I don't know how they're going to replace him. That's kind of a blow when you lose like a homegrown one, especially to a juggernaut like Oregon. But what are your thoughts on the Golden Gophers, Mr. Woods?
I mean, that will be a, you know, something to replace. My big thought is, did you have any idea that we are in year 10 of PJ Fleck?
No.
Year 10. It seems like only yesterday we were rowing the boat at, what was that, Central Western Michigan? Western Michigan.
Was it Western? I think it was Western.
Yeah. And now here we are 10 years later, and he's still there, despite some of his best efforts to get out of there. He's still there, despite like begging for another job.
Remember we had an email, our Minnesota fan, and he gave a lot of, I'd have to go back and look at it, but he gave a lot of love for PJ and like what they've done there.
Yeah. It's true. I will say, I mean, they've got some edge rush coming in. I mean, TJ Bush, I think he's from Cal. He's supposed to be pretty good. Their defensive tackle room though, I think is getting entirely rebuilt. So it's not just going to be Coy being gone. It's also, you know, they've got some pieces they've got to replace up front.
They got Mekhi Smith from Lehigh.
Hey.
He's coming in the safety spot. Yeah, like that's, you know, that's what the RCBS friends put in there as a, hey, look, this could work.
Yeah. But, I mean, the thing is, they outperformed probably my expectations last year. I think PJ Fleck is an okay coach. So I would anticipate Minnesota probably outperforming again a little bit.
I think, you know, it's just one of those teams that's just going to do better than average. Maybe they beat some teams. They're not going to get pilfered in the portal, and they're not going to like crush, you know, transfers in, but they'll keep enough and they'll bring enough guys back and they'll do enough right things. I just don't know. It seems like ceiling and floor are fairly close. You're like, it's like the trash compactor in Star Wars there. You know, it's like, it's just, they're kind of close together. Like, I don't think they're going to drop too far, but I don't think they're, I don't know how big the heights can get.
Yeah, I think that's fair. Yeah, I think that's fair.
Sideways trash compactor. If you want to do ceiling floor, not like, you know, that came in the side. That was like a traumatic thing as a kid watching that, you know, like
it still gives me kind of claustrophobia if I watch that thing.
Really?
Again. Yeah. Yeah. Like they filmed it really well.
Yeah. Whatever that like big pole.
They get
thing.
The pole, but I'm just like, no, get it more horizontal. it's too, and then it's too late because the things have closed too close.
Yeah. And like you had to have their comm thing was like as big as like a lighter or something. Like you didn't have something, you know, there wasn't a watch or anything. Be like, 3PO, get us out of here.
Well, like, and among other things, there has to be a monster in here too. Like, oh, it couldn't just be monster. The walls closing. No. What are we doing here?
And a monster.
Yeah.
All right. Let's go to, let's see, where is it?
UCLA Bruins.
Wow. No, you're the expert, but I'll let you know.
No, this stupid. Is this the year Nico puts it all together? That's not the storyline from spring. Come on, CBS.
Okay, well, CBS is saying that.
So today was Bob Chesney's first spring football practice at UCLA. And that's the storyline. That is the storyline. It's for the first time in a long time, UCLA has a professional head coach who actually wants to do the job.
First time since Chip Kelly, right?
First time since first 3 years of Jim Mora. Okay. So it's a different deal. We are basically getting the same access everyone in the country gets these days, which is, you know, like 20 minutes at the beginning and like 10 minutes at the end. So we're seeing individuals, we're seeing special teams and that whole thing. But I would say the main storyline is really how are you going to integrate all these transfers, and then the strengths. They brought in a bunch of really good receivers. I think receiver, running back, they're going to be strengths. I think on the defensive side, the defensive back room, they returned Roderick Pleasant, Scooter Jackson, Cole Martin, all from last year's team. All of them were starters. All of them were quite good. And they brought in, you know, Utah starting transfer safety, Teo Johnson, brought in Tashawn James, an Iowa State starter at safety. And then in addition to that, they brought in JMU's DJ Barksdale, who was a starting nickel in the Sun Belt. And then they brought in some decent corners too. So secondary is going to be a strength on defense, and receiver and running back will be strengths on offense. The question marks, the big ones for me, are defensive tackle, where the additions, even the additions, you kind of have to squint at to see starters. One, Daryl Dungohe, he's Rutgers defensive tackle. He was originally at JMU, transferred to Rutgers, but then was hurt all of last year. He was good at JMU and then was intended to start at Rutgers last year before he got hurt. He'll probably have to start at UCLA. And then there's a couple of former high-level high school prospects. One, Tyson Ford, who's spent 4 years of college football at this point. He comes in from Cal. He's been hurt a lot in his career. And then the other one, probably the one I am more I'm saying is more likely to end up playing is Maxwell Roy, who all he did was he was a four-star out of high school, went to Ohio State, redshirted 1 year, and then transferred out. So usually those guys are still retaining a lot of their high school juice. So I would anticipate he will play a role this year. But defensive tackle is a question mark, and then linebacker is another question mark. There UCLA lost its starters from last year who didn't perform very well. And then brought in an Oklahoma transfer in Sammy Omosigo, who didn't start at Oklahoma last year, but he's going to have to more than likely start and be a key, maybe the key guy in the linebacker room for UCLA. So up the middle on defense, certainly not important. Can't imagine anyone thinks that it's important. That's a question mark. And then offensive line is always a question mark. I'm less skeptical because they brought in so many bodies, so many guys who've had starting experience. I think they're going to be okay. I know there, that's a question. But Nico is the opposite of a question. I think this is anybody who's questioning Nico Iamaliava did not update their priors after this past year where, deep ball maybe still a little inaccurate, but tough as shit.
He was tough.
Willing to take hits, full on leader, like all the stuff you want out of a quarterback entering his fourth year now of college football. I think people just need to get whatever they had as an impression of him at Tennessee out of their heads, because that's not even close to the player we saw last year. I mean, playing that hard on a team that was that shitty is...
Sorry, Griffin.
I mean, that's the kind of stuff that, like, okay, this is a dude you'd follow. So I don't think there's any concern about Nico. Basically, the main thing is, will the offensive line be good enough to keep him upright? And if they are, I think he's going to have a pretty good year.
All righty. Good stuff. Let's see. West Texas Mike. Wait, this was the wrong one. Would Ryan like to interrupt David Woods again with Penn State fun facts? What was that from?
I don't remember.
Yeah. You really got to give us more.
Mike, you're asking us to remember stuff again.
I don't do well with that.
Stop it.
So the Bruins, basically, just like Kirk Cignetti, will go 11-1 and make the playoffs, is what you're saying.
I wouldn't go that far. I think they're going to be obviously better. And I think the schedule presents the opportunity to go like 8-4, 9-3.
Wow.
It does. I mean, like right now, we'll go through the SP Plus, but if you go based on like the schedule, there's like three games where they'll be absolute dogs in, and then there are nine where you can talk yourself into them eventually being favored if they look good in the preseason.
Okay.
So, we will see, but it's certainly there's the opportunity there for UCLA to actually be, you know, pretty good.
I think they're
going to
miss this guy. They're going to miss
the anger I feel still when looking at that picture. It's still
for the podcast audience. I put a picture of Charles. What's his name?
Edward
Kelly.
Yes,
up on the screen, who we will talk about in a little bit, because he's in the Big Ten again, which is some good stuff. All right, the last one we're going to talk about.
Washington Huskies.
Yes, what's the burning question there? Could Damon Williams, his play, justify all the drama? Darian Mensah, that was crazy, right? Like that quarterback stuff. But outside of that, when you thought Damon Williams was going to go to Lane Kiffin and LSU and just signed a deal like for $4 million and days later was going to go into the portal and skipped out a memorial service or a funeral for a team. Like there was some crazy stuff going on. And I think the Big Ten contract writers came through on this one. And we did hear from Jed Fish and he said there was a number of things, but I think the main thing was that we figure out that like, yeah, you could leave, but you're paying Washington $4 million on the way out. And so then it's going to cost you like more than double. If you're going to get paid $6 million in Baton Rouge, that's like $10 million to this guy. So I think that made LSU balk. But there was drama. And he's back. The interview I heard with Jed Fish is like, everything's going to be cool. Hunky-dory. It's going to be fine. I don't know. Players don't seem to forget. Like there could be some bad blood in that locker room. But he's your leader. You're going to follow him into battle. He's kind of one of those, there's some low floor, high ceiling moments from, you know, he could have a 3-interception game, whatever. What are your thoughts on the kind of drama going on there? That it seems like that's going to be the biggest story in Seattle.
It's going to be the biggest story until the season starts, and whether they win or lose games, it's going to be part of the narrative. And if they lose games, which they will, I think it's constantly going to be talked about.
Sorry.
What was that?
That was like I closed the tab and it was a video tab that I guess just started going. It's actually
like, is it like the most boring porn of all time?
No,
like
it was
PowerPoint porn.
It was a color correction for our I'm trying to do color correction stuff, trying to like make our stuff a little better. So like you, how's that?
Ooh.
I think it looks pretty good.
Ooh.
Ooh, yeah, that's the one shot. Yeah. If you're listening on the podcast,
oh yeah,
they might not have heard it on the broadcast, but we heard it in our ear. So,
Damon Williams. First, it's everything that like this was a very public thing, and not just from Damon Williams' standpoint. Jed Fish's wife was tweeting about it. Like, there was a lot of negativity about Damond Williams, very public, from a lot of Washington people publicly. And obviously he was, you know, quote unquote, in the wrong here. But like the amount of mending fences that needs to happen or needed to happen here is pretty profound. And there was a lot of talk at the time of like, do you even want him back when he's done something like this? Because football is like, you know, there are team sports and then there are team sports. And football is a team sport. Like, you need to be all rowing in the same direction because it's hard and it sucks and it's brutal and it's just, it's not easy. And you gotta, like, there's gotta be belief. Like, the best football teams have, like, you know, incredible belief in each other. There's this, like, close knitness that is just not, it's not easily replicable. And, I don't know. This feels like something that would be pretty destructive to it because a quarterback is a unique position on the field, starting quarterback especially, and to know that that guy was that close to leaving, fully intended to leave, and then it was essentially like some stickiness around his contract that made it so he couldn't leave.
Yeah.
And then it was a question of whether everyone wanted to enforce that contract or not. And then wasn't it just the prospect of having to pay a fee that kept him there? And then Washington had to decide whether they would own up their end of their contract. Like, this was an ugly, ugly thing. And I don't know. I mean, I'm interested to see, because a lot of the soft stuff, the narrative stuff that we sports writer types like to talk about, feels like it's going to be tested by this year's Washington team, because none of that soft stuff seems like it was positive for Washington in the offseason.
For sure. I mean, I'm trying to, like, if there's a parallel, but say, like, you know, we're a close-knit team, right? You and I have been doing this podcast for years. Say one of us, like, left the network for another one. Like, would you know, that's probably going to do a lot of harm to that relationship, I would think, you know?
Yeah.
Are you even paying attention? No.
Yeah, I did. I heard.
You bastard. No, I was kidding.
You dirty apes. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, when I heard the interview with Jed Fish, he seemed pretty confident about it, but it's I think it can be a real issue. You're right. I mean, this is stuff, I think if you watch the NBA at all, like, I think Orlando is like in the tank and they were playing well and now they're playing like crap and you know not liking the coach and the star isn't doing well. And I mean, when things just go a little bit wrong on a team like that, then it's just hard for everybody to work as hard, and it's you're not going to do all the little things, to picking up loose balls and stuff like that. And that's basketball. Like, football is even more, like, where you have 11 dudes at a time, two different units, plus the whole special teams thing. If your quarterback isn't the one that is the Pied Piper and leading the way and everybody's following him, if they're sort of like, you know, like, okay, I'll try to block hard for him, I guess. That's a big difference than, like, that's my quarterback. I'm going to, like, put my body on the line for him, you know, if it's making a crazy catch on the sideline or it's picking up a blitz from the running back spot. Like, every single one of those dudes is making choices about how hard they're going to play for 80 plays a game or whatever it is. And if there's any, like, indication of, like, I'm not sure, like, you're not going to get the kind of effort you need to make a run and try to, you know, push to the playoffs. Because that's what you want to see from this Washington team, right? It's like, and I think your point is really good. Like, maybe everyone's just 100% bought in, but if you're not, like, it can show up in a lot of different ways.
Yeah, yeah. And that will be, I don't know, again, like, if they go on a run to start the year, then we won't continue talking about it. But if they have, you know, as teams do, if they lose a couple of games, it's going to be a big part of the narrative.
And even just if they start playing well and everyone's on the same page and then there's a little adversity,
do you
rally? Like, you circle the wagons, as Chris Bourbon would like to say about the Buffalo Bills. Do you do that? Do you circle the wagons around the guy that bailed on you? I don't know.
Yep.
You hope they do. I mean, I think, you know, some kids have made some poor choices here with, you know, family members or agents or whatever. It happens. And you don't want to blame the kid all the time, but getting paid a lot of money, I mean, you got to think long and hard. If you're getting a $4 million deal, you sign it, and then days later, you want to get out of it. Like, holy crap. Like, that's some bad advice. I don't know what you're, you know, like, you're in college.
Yeah.
Like, take your $4 million and be like, I'm happy to be here.
100%.
Okay, so we mentioned You said Bob Connolly, but it's actually Bill Connolly, David. So ESPN, he was with SB Nation for a long time. It's actually now not behind the paywall anymore, so you can look at the SP Plus rankings, and he came out with his preseason rankings. And just wanted to kind of go through where all the Big Ten teams are. Is that okay with you?
That works for me.
Should I do all the sound effects?
Yeah, for sure.
Okay, number one.
The Ohio State Buckeyes.
You don't have to go that far to get to number two.
Oregon Ducks.
Down at number five, the defending national champions.
Indiana Hoosiers.
Hey, folks. I'm from Indiana.
All right. Those are the three teams in the top five. No other ones in the top 10, but at 13, you got
USC Trojans.
Right behind them, number 14,
Michigan Wolverines.
Wow, scratch, 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 scratch.
This one's a little scratch, scratch, scratch. 17, you got
Penn State Nittany Lions.
A little head scratcher there, but you know, we'll see. We already just mentioned them. Number 21,
Washington Huskies.
All right, let's go to number 22,
Iowa Hawkeyes.
It's just kind of an excuse to play all the sounds again, but okay, so those are the teams in the top 25, dropping down to number 33.
Illinois Fighting Illini.
Hi, I'm from Illinois.
Then at 37,
Nebraska Cornhuskers.
I'm peeling corn.
You mentioned this team can outplay expectations, and I can see where they're put here. They could outplay this ranking. Number 45,
Minnesota Golden Gophers.
Just under them, the Fighting Kenny Chesneys.
UCLA Bruins.
Wow.
Such good sound effects. All right, number 49, your pal.
Northwestern Wildcats.
Weirdly, their offense is only projected to be 78th in the country.
That's so weird because you got a genius running things. So.
Damn.
We got double nickels, 55. We got
Maryland Terrapins.
That's not that good. You know what's worse? Whew, this is not good either. 61.
Wisconsin Badgers.
They bring Fickell back, and this is where you land? Come on. We got to be better than that. 62.
Rutgers Scarlet Knights.
Scarlet Knight.
And I don't know if Bill realized that they hired Pat Fitzgerald, baby. Number 67.
Michigan State Spartans.
Charge!
Or he did realize it, and that's why they're there. And then rounding up number 18. Number 18 in your hearts in our conference, but number 82 overall.
Purdue Boilermakers.
Beautiful.
Yeah. So that's where the Big Ten lands. Three teams in the top five. Pretty impressive.
Yeah.
Bill does, is it like a yards per play thing? Or is he a drive
No, it's
guy?
Efficiency.
It's efficiency.
Yeah.
But per play, I think, and not per drive.
It's per play, not per drive. Okay. So per drive, that's your the F plus.
FEI or?
Yeah. The Brian Fromau, BCF Toys.
Okay.
That's where you can find it. That is drive based. But yeah, this is per play efficiency. Basically, it's a proxy for success rate, which is most easily defined as getting half your yardage on first down, getting 67% of your yardage on second down, or getting all of your yardage on third or fourth down. That is a successful play.
Okay.
Okay. Or I guess it works out to 70% of your yardage on second down. But anyway, it's broadly, and then it does there's some other stuff built in. It's kind of a black box, his whole ranking system, but it generally works out as pretty predictive as a Vegas tool, like as a, you know, it actually ends up setting the lines in a lot of ways. It's become kind of a public measure that Vegas uses to set lines. So anyway, it's a good tool. It does a pretty good job every year. It leans, especially preseason, on talent. So like talent ratings of both transfers of high school ratings can play a big role. It's why you always see, and you always will continue to see, like Ohio State, Oregon are going to be 1-2 almost always in the Big Ten because they're bringing in the most talent year in and year out, and they've got track record of consistent success. They're always going to be in the top 10 of the SP Plus. They're always going to be in the preseason, like top five. So Indiana being down at five, that's not abnormal. It's Indiana being at five is a function of more than likely losing some returning production and then also not consistently having the highly rated classes that Ohio State and Oregon do on a consistent basis. I guess one of the few big notes, if you read further down in his initial story, UCLA is one of the biggest risers in the SP Plus from year to year, up 13.6, essentially. He's got like this margin measure. It's the actual SP Plus, like not the like value of the SP Plus, like where they would rank relative to an average team. UCLA has gone up 13.7. So last year they were negative 8 something. This year they're 5.1. So they've gone from being a wildly below average to expectation being that they'll be slightly above average this year. Everything else in the Big Ten, though, looks like it was more or less chalk with what we had last year. The Big Ten, though, is ranked in total as the second best conference.
Oh, outside.
Behind the SEC.
SEC, okay. Yeah, Penn State's up there, you know, like... I think they like, I guess, the players they brought in. Do you know the weighting of this? Because, like, if you look at the numbers, like for Ohio State, for instance, the overall number, they're 31.8 SP plus. Offensively, they're second, 40.6. And then defensively, the first, it's 8.8. But that's where you want a lower number, right? Like that.
Yeah, and that's where the big difference is between what, you know, between the next best team, right? Because number two is at 12.5. So the defense is where Ohio State sets itself apart and is why it is, you know, functionally preseason 3 points better than anyone else on a neutral field because of the defense, which is stellar. Oregon's got the number one offense, but it's only a tick above Ohio State. So the differentiator, at least preseason, according to Bill, is Ohio State's defense.
And then the special teams, it's ranked there, but it doesn't seem to have much.
It barely matters.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. They have like Ohio State's 67th and they're 0.1 in special teams.
There are so few special teams plays in a game that like have an impact that over the course of a season, you might get something meaningful out of it, but like there's so much random variance in what happens on special teams. Like did one guy miss an assignment and it just so happened that the runner that time was able to take it back? Well, is that something that's indicative? Now, you and I have watched enough USC and UCLA football over the years to know that special teams can be a habit, baby, and bad special teams especially, but it does have a little bit more randomness to it than the defensive and offensive measures just because there's so few special teams plays in a game.
Yeah, I didn't quite realize that. We were talking about that on the show. Like USC has the 6th ranked offense, 29th ranked defense, which is pretty optimistic, I would think, with Gary Patterson coming in. But their special teams ranked 100. And last year, like Nebraska special teams went from like in the 80s to top 10 or something like that. And they had Mike Eckler as their special teams guy, and USC hired him away. And they were bad on special teams, got really good with him. We'll see what happens with Nebraska. But I'm like, well, USC special teams can get better than that. But even if it does, it doesn't impact the rankings that much. But as of this, you know, we had three Big Ten teams make the college football playoff last year. There's three in the top 11, which is what you would be, you know, you have to be for the college football playoff rankings. So it'd be the same three teams. So we'll see if that continues, but then some other teams kind of knocking on the door. We'll see where they go there. But any other takeaways from the SP Plus rankings?
No, not really. I mean, the Big Ten is well represented, as it should be. You know, we'll see at the end of the day if it ends up being number two to the SEC or kind of like last year, outperforming expectations and end up closer to number one.
Yeah. I know, like Michigan State, like, man, Purdue's bad, Michigan State's bad. Wisconsin, you bring back Luke Fickell, 61st. Like, there's some questions here. But I think you're going to see a bounce back from some of those teams, you know. Like Minnesota being like 45th. When we at the end of the season, I can almost guarantee you they're going to be, what, they're like 10th in this? 1, 2, 3. Yeah, they're 10th. It's like, I bet you they finish like 7th or 8th, right? Like, they're going to be better than what you think going into the season, like just to your point earlier.
Yep.
So 10 years for Fleck. Absolutely crazy. All right, well, why don't we take a quick break, and we'll come back and do some questions. We don't got a lot today, so
let's go.
Here we go. Back in a minute, everybody. Alrighty, we're back here on the Podcast of Champions. I can't believe we went 40 minutes. I thought we really were like 25 minutes in.
No, we've just been having such a good time.
We have. We have a really good time here on our show. How many years has it been? It's more than 10, right? We've been doing this?
We've been doing this since May of 2015.
You were younger then.
I was a much younger man then.
I was younger too.
I was 29 years old.
Oh my God.
29. I used to have a big, beautiful brown and gold beard and red.
It was pretty epic. I mean, you still have a great beard.
It's look how white it is. Look at this thing.
It's pretty white. Here, you want to, we'll put you on solo.
Yeah, put
solo.
Me front and center. Look at this thing. All right, hang on. Let me move the mic. Look at this.
Yeah, it's a lot of gray.
It's so much. It's so much.
I got a lot of gray too, but my hair, yeah. My hair is gray.
My one of my older sisters, she started to go gray. I want to say like early 20s.
Oh shoot!
Yeah, yeah. No, no. The Irish genes took us out. They knocked us out.
All right. So if you have any questions in the chat, I don't think we had anything come through. But otherwise, we'll get out of here pretty quickly. But we, Harrison Dave wrote to us and said, "I can't unsee this now," and sent us a screenshot. From our show with some graphics added. I will put it up on the screen. Talking college football in the spring. This was our screenshot from the last show. I was smiling. David was showing a grumpy face. And because I couldn't do a grumpy face to David's liking because I was smiling too much in my grumpy face. So I ended up smiling. He did grumpy face. And then he put up, if you're listening, a picture of the snow miser and heat miser. I would be the snow miser. And David would be the heat miser.
And this is from the hit 1974, The Year Without a Santa Claus.
I did like that one.
I've never seen it.
You never saw the one?
No, I'm merely 40.
Yes, but they didn't only play it in 1974. Like
this was not one of mine. No.
Okay. There are some songs in the chat if you remember. Like it's like I'm Mr. Heat Miser. I'm Mr. Sun. Mr. Green Christmas. I'm Mr. 101.
That's from that?
Yeah.
Huh.
Friends call me Heat Miser. Whatever I touch starts to melt in my clutch. I'm too much. I think that's how it goes.
Wow.
And then Cold Miser, who I am. I don't think I know the Cold Miser song as much, but anyway, yes. So you've seen it then?
No, I've heard the song.
Okay, well. What, it wasn't being on the radio, like if you.
No, probably... I heard it. I'm sure from somebody referencing this.
Okay,
I've got a really good memory for songs. Like I can listen to things like a couple of times and pretty much have the entire lyrics down.
Oh, good.
And the whole thing.
Okay.
So
one of your many talents.
The only talents I have in life are absolutely fucking sorry, Griffin. Absolutely worthless. Every single one of my, like, and they're like, oh, wow, that's extraordinary. What could you use that for? Nothing. Nothing. You want me to take a standardized test for you? I'm your man.
Okay.
Will that help me in any facet of my life after the age of 22? No. Okay. Not at all.
Nice.
It's beautiful.
This is Baseball Brock.
All right.
He put the Big Ten is better than the SEC, and he says the big, B-U-N-G. It just has more means.
That's right, baby.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's right. We got more money than you.
No SEC teams in the Final Four, two of them, and both Big Ten teams are favored.
That's right.
Saturday night. Slight favorites, but favorites, which probably means it's going to be Arizona-UConn, but still. Whatever. But thank you for that graphic. I'll put it up again. I would be the snow miser, and David would be the heat miser.
POC Jock says, POC Stuart Little, David and Ryan, I assume you've seen the 1999 American live-action animated comedy film Stuart Little. What do you think the other orphans thought when the Little family decided to adopt a mouse rather than them? So, POC Jock, you have actually picked out a time period where I was watching precisely zero animated films, which is from the time I was about 13 or 14 to the time I was probably about 22. So there's this whole realm of animated movies. Like, I didn't watch Mulan, for example. I think it came out in 1998. I didn't watch it until my kids. So a full, like, almost 20 years later, I didn't watch that movie. I should have watched it then. It's very good. But Stuart Little, it's in that, like, I did not. This was not something that you can assume I would have watched because I haven't. And also, it's not the kind of thing that's like a classic enough that like my kids would go back to it.
Yeah.
So I'm probably never watching this movie.
I might have. I don't think I did. And I don't quite remember. But yeah, it does seem a little wacky if you're going to adopt a mouse and not the kid or kids.
Yeah.
So, but I can't really help you there.
I've recently begun watching, I think I may have shared this previously, Anne with an E. It's the retelling of Anne of Green Gables. You know that? You know Anne of Green Gables?
I do not.
Wow, look at you. It's the like relatively recent retelling of it. It's on Netflix with my children. It's really quite good, but it's about adopting an orphan girl.
Okay.
And they thought it was an orphan boy, but then she turns out to have been a girl. And they're like, what the hell? We didn't ask for a girl. We ordered a boy and you're a girl. But then it's, you know, it's like a little slice of life. It's very good. If you're looking for something to watch with, you know, I would say like not older kids, but like late single digits, early double digits. I think it's pretty good.
Okay.
Pretty good. Good storylines.
So it's a retelling. It was
So Anne of Green Gables is a series of books by a woman. It's set in like late 1800s, early 1900s, Prince Edward Island, Canada.
Oh, okay.
It's about an orphan girl who goes to live with a family and then slowly, two old people, a brother and a sister who live together, you know, classic like, you know, spinster old lady who never, you know, married anybody. And then the brother is like kind of a doddering fool, but just kind of a quiet guy. They have had a tragic background. They bring her in, and then it's like slowly turning her into their like adopted daughter, and then her like life as a, you know, it's great. It's just good stuff. It's good stuff.
Okay.
I recommend it. Anyway, I'm reading those books now to my children, and because I still do that. Even though they're 12 and
that's
9,
cool.
I still read to them at night.
No, that's cool.
I think it's cool.
I like it.
But anyway, I'm reading that to them, and it's written, like, I think it was written around the 1900, like, turn of the century.
Okay.
Man, reading that out loud is tough. Like, using nouns as, like, verbs, and, like, just, like, the phrasing is so awkward that, like, I catch myself mid-sentence halfway through, and I'm like, no, I'm not saying the right thing, because I'm saying this as if this is the end of the sentence, but it's not, because they've changed the way they phrase these things in the last 125 years. And it's, like, Canadian dialect, too, so it's a mess. Anyway, that's a long diatribe about Anne with an E, but you should watch it with your children.
Yeah.
You.
Asian Wolf.
Out there.
Jeez, David, you look as old as Ryan. Kids?
I know.
He does.
I know.
Two kids. I would say 5 years per kid, so then I'm 55 and you're 50.
I would say since 2020, so since the beginning of COVID, I have aged dog years. Like, if you go back and find an image of me from 2019, and then you look at me now, and you're
like... We can look on our show.
You'd be like, holy shit. Like, it's grim what has happened to me since COVID.
Yikes.
Yeah. And I don't know if that's just father time or if it's the added stress, but it is not good. It is not good.
I've embraced the... So when you turn 50, so you got some time, but you can start getting AARP stuff.
Yeah.
And there's not really anything... I haven't found anything great. If you're in the chat and you're over 50 and found some great stuff for that. But 55 is different. So I turned 55 in December. And there are some new things. And I was like, I know some people are ignoring. I'm like, anything I could get for free or a discount as a 55-year-old, I'm doing it. And my mom's coming to visit. We're going to take the ferry over to Catalina. She's never been. And I go to Catalina all the time, but she hasn't been. So we're going to take it. And I was booking our boats. And I drive a boat over there a lot, but we're booking the ferry. And there's like, so I put two adults to start, and then I'm like, wait a second. And it's like two senior citizens. I mean, senior citizen is 55 and up. So my mom, who's 79, and myself, we are both in the senior. So I got the $8 discount or whatever, and I was very happy about it.
Yeah.
I'm not shying away from any sort of discounts or anything. So
I won't be either, and I'll probably get offered them much earlier than you ever did. all right, what's next?
Oh, this is El Gordo Flacco, games and coaches. Hello. Number one, in your opinion, what game are you most excited to see this upcoming year for USC or UCLA?
I can start with UCLA. Game one. I think it's going to actually be an interesting test at Cal for the opener. Cal's going to be better. UCLA should be better. Tosh Lapoy, I mean, I don't think anyone quite knows what to expect up there, and I don't think anyone quite knows what to expect from Bob Chesney and UCLA. So I think that is, I mean, hard to, like, you know, put too much emphasis on the first game of an era, but I think that's a pretty significant game for both of those programs to have scheduled. You know, they scheduled it obviously before they knew what they'd be facing and, you know, having a new regime in place, but that's going to be an interesting one.
For sure.
So, that's the one I'm looking forward to for UCLA.
On the USC side, like, I grew up in Western Pennsylvania, and USC's going to play Penn State. That'll be a fun one for me to go to. As far as, like, significance for USC, it's probably going to be the USC-Oregon game in the Coliseum. It's in September. USC's finally got their act together a little bit and has been battling the Ducks on the recruiting trail after the Ducks were just eating USC's lunch. As far as recruits go, USC's got back and they've been able to flip guys and go toe-to-toe with Oregon on the recruiting trail, but they haven't beat them on the field for a while. So I think that's, as far as importance go, I think that would be the one that USC fans would circle as the most important one to win. For me, I like seeing new places. I've never been to Happy Valley to see a game. You know, I'm originally from that area. So that's the one I'm looking forward to. Two, what is the possibility Chip Kelly only does 1 year at Northwestern? I'm glad we get to talk about Chip Kelly a lot more.
I'd say pretty good chance.
I mean, when's the last time he wasn't a place 1 year?
UCLA.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I think there's several things, but like at a place like Northwestern, I mean, I know it's not a recruiting hotbed, but that makes it almost important enough, more important that everyone is recruiting. Chip Kelly doesn't recruit. And it's one thing if you're the head coach, I guess, not recruiting too heavily, but like any assistant coach needs to recruit. Like coordinators need to recruit. He doesn't like to do that. So I think he's going to wear out his welcome at the college level pretty quickly unless they're absolutely gangbusters offensively. And spoiler alert, they're not going to be gangbusters offensively. So I'd be surprised actually if they did make it past a year.
All right, and his third one, what new Big 18 head coach do both of you think will have the most impact on their program? Not necessarily wins, but building a foundation and getting the program moving in the right direction. Thanks, El Gordo Flacco.
I mean, come on. You know my answer to this question. Let's not be too crazy, guys. We all know my answer to this question.
Kyle Whittingham?
Obviously.
Okay, Kyle Whittingham.
Beautiful Bob Chesney.
Oh, the Fighting Kenny Chesneys. As far as like where you're taking over to where you could go, I think that's, Whittingham could like.
Taking over Michigan and taking them what? Back to the national title game they were in 2 years ago?
Yeah, I think the biggest impact though, and if I'm going to ignore the second sentence of his question, I'm going to go Pat Fitzgerald.
Oh, he's well, because he's actually going, you mean like the crater that forms from whatever he performs at Michigan State will be bigger than anything else? Biggest impact, like the asteroid and deep impact?
Yes. I don't have any rooting.
It's going to take out Taya Leone and her dad on the beach.
I wasn't as down on this one, but
what,
I'm
you
so
liked Armageddon more?
No, I do like Armageddon. But like, so many people are like, this is going to be like the worst thing ever. And yeah, so now I'm sort of rooting for that just because like so many people were like calling it out. I wasn't one of those people that were like, Pat Fitzgerald, that's going to be awful. Like I was like, oh, that could be okay. But so many people are just that, nah. I'm like, okay, well, I might as well just jump on that bandwagon. So we'll see what happens. You know what the funniest part of this email is? Okay, so this is in Gmail. We got the whole email, the subject, games and coaches, all that. Thanks. And there's a suggested, an AI suggested reply underneath.
We're in hell world, guys. Like, we are in deep hell world.
But you're going to love this. It says, hey, one, definitely the first rivalry game. So which game are you most excited for? Okay, that's so just generic nothing.
Bullshit.
Two, I think he'll be there for a while. Seems like a good fit, was for Chip Kelly at Northwestern. And three, probably the one who got the biggest overhaul. Thanks. Like, so in what world would any, like, would this reply, like, do, like, help the world at all? Just the fact that it's sitting in front of me that I read it, it did not make the world a better place.
Am I slowly turning you into an anti-AI person? Is this working out for me?
Maybe. It could, yeah.
Anti-LLM?
Oh, we just got
we got another one. This is from Maximus Decimus Meridius. Hey, Ryan and Dave, quick question. Is the annual USC spring recruiting national championship parade before or after USC actually makes a playoff appearance? Because the Clay Helton level winning percentage with dynasty level hype is becoming an incredible yearly tradition.
Yes, Maximus. There's some hype.
Off-season natty, baby, every year.
Where did Connolly have him? 13? Like number four, the fourth team in the Big Ten right now?
Do you hang a banner for that?
You could. I don't know. They could do something. They're, yeah. And we'll see. And, you know, obviously UCLA is going 11-1. So, I mean, that started before spring ball.
Nobody ever has UCLA winning an offseason natty, though, baby.
True.
Not since Jim Mora.
Well, now they are.
I mean, they're winning like an offseason, like, conference game. Like, okay. Let's not get ahead of ourselves.
I know you're a history major, right? So maybe math isn't your strong suit, but we got some help for you in the chat. They say presidents age 3 years for every year in office. Parents have to be at least 2 years for every year, and so ergo, then 1 year additional for every kid after. So is David actually older than Ryan?
So I'll say like. Typical parenting year, obviously 2 years. I would say, like, for me, 2020, 2021, I want to say each of those individually aged me about 5 to 6 years. So I probably gained year. 10 years, 2020, 2021. So I was already like, I already looked like when I was like 30, I looked like I was in my mid 30s. Like, I've looked like I'm in my mid 30s since like I was in my late 20s, but like I was catching up to my actual age. Okay. But then it started accelerating rapidly away from me again. So I want to say I added, like, say I looked, let's call it 37 in 2020. I suddenly looked 47 by 2022, and then it's added 10 more years. So I would say, like, right now, I probably look like between 55 and 57, right? Let's be real.
I'm not going to say that.
But that's about where I'm feeling, like about 55 to 57.
All right.
Yeah.
Good stuff. Well,
yeah, no, he says, so like a president during a war. Exactly. Exactly. And if the war of 2020, 2021 had gone on a little bit longer, I probably would have died like FDR. Like, I probably would have been in the hot springs in Arkansas, and then it would have been over for me.
But you didn't start with polio or anything.
Dude, I might have gotten polio. I don't know. Okay. 2020 was rough.
Okay. All right. Well, it was a fun show. We do appreciate everyone that was in the chat live watching us, and however you listen or checking out our YouTube channel, we appreciate all of that stuff. But for it's going to wrap it up here. For David Woods, I am Ryan Abraham. Hope you all enjoyed the show, and we will talk to you next time.
Goodbye. Yeah.